Hare Krishna. First of all, I want to thank all the devotees for so enthusiastically coming for hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. Thank you very much. I also want to thank the devotees here at Bhaktivedanta Manor for organizing Bhagavat Katha. This is the best service, Srila Prabhupada said, that if you want people to feel loved and emotionally fulfilled, Srila Prabhupada wanted all of us to take shelter of Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is that one book, one scripture, which can fill the emotional void of our hearts. Sanatan Goswami, one of the foremost Vaishnava Acharyas, he has explained, Madeka bandhu mat sangin, mat guru mat mahadana, mat nistaraka mat bhagya, madananda namostute. He says, he is the foremost Vaishnava Acharya and he is explaining very beautifully that I have my one best friend, Madeka Bandhu. Who is my Bandhu? Srimad Bhagavatam. Madeka Bandhu Mat Sangin, my best associate, my companion is Srimad Bhagavatam. Mat Guru, my spiritual master is Srimad Bhagavatam. Mat Mahadhana, my greatest wealth is Srimad Bhagavatam. Mat Nistaraka Mat Bhagya, my deliverer from the entanglement of material existence is Srimad Bhagavatam. My greatest fortune, my Mad Bhagya, is Srimad Bhagavatam. Madananda Namostute, my greatest source of ananda, pleasure, is Srimad Bhagavatam. So Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada said, is like a sugar candy. Wherever you taste the sugar candy, it is sweet. Similarly, when we hear about Srimad Bhagavatam, we will feel rich, we will feel happy and we will feel satisfied. And Srila Prabhupada has emphasized many times that even if we don't find it so attractive in the initial days, he said, you just dutifully hear and see over a period of time how the transformation takes place. There is a very famous verse in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam where Srila Prabhupada explains this mood. Narad Muni is teaching Vyasdev, Tadvag visargo janataga viplavo yasmin pratishlokam abudhya yatyapi namanantasya yashon kitaniyat shunvanti gayanti grinanti sadhava. Narad Muni is telling his disciple Vyasdev that if we glorify Krishna and if this glorification is grammatically incorrect, even if our glorification of Krishna is full of mistakes, no problem. That glorification of Krishna, which is imperfectly composed, is much, much better than all the perfect compositions that is there in this world. And what is the proof? He says, Tadvag visargo janataga viplavo. Viplavo means a major revolution. A major revolution will take place if we glorify Krishna. And if this glorification, yasmin pratishlokam abudhya yatyapi, even if it is imperfect. And those who are sincere souls, who are looking for Krishna, they will be attracted by this sound vibration. Naman anantasya shon kitaniyat shrinvanti gayanti grinanti sadhava. There will be a revolution. And Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport to this verse. Now, please remember, Srila Prabhupada wrote the commentary on the first canto of Bhagavatam many years before he went to America. And he writes in the commentary that English is a foreign language for me. Srila Prabhupada, as all of you know, he was born and raised in Calcutta, Bengal, West Bengal. And in all humility, writes in the purport that English is a foreign language for me. But I am confident, and he says, my explanation of Srimad Bhagavatam is filled with literary discrepancies. But I am confident that because I have a sincere desire to glorify Krishna and present Srimad Bhagavatam, this literature will certainly bring about a major revolution in the world. This was indirectly a prediction that Srila Prabhupada was making. Because a few years after he wrote this, he went to America and we know what happened. Srimad Bhagavatam did indeed create a revolution. People's lives changed dramatically and they took shelter of Krishna. In fact, when Srila Prabhupada was presenting Krishna consciousness in New York in 1960s, mid-1960s, the young hippies, the boys and girls who were coming for his classes, couldn't understand his heavy, rich Bengali accent. Srila Prabhupada would, one day in the class he said, "So, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has come to shave all of you." So these hippies had long hair. And they heard Srila Prabhupada say, "Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has come to shave all of you." So they looked at each other quizzically. "What is Swamiji saying?" And Srila Prabhupada understood what they are thinking. Srila Prabhupada smiled. "Yes, yes, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has come to save and shave both." So his English was saying Lord Chaitanya. Now the boys and girls were sitting in the class and they were writing notes. They couldn't understand many things. Like Sanatan Goswami is a great Vaishnava saint, and the boys and girls were attending the class and writing notes. They didn't understand what is this Sanatan Goswami. They didn't know who he was, what he was. Somebody wrote in the notes, for Sanatan they wrote as Suntan. Somebody wrote Saunton. Everybody wrote different spelling, different name, and they didn't understand what the pastime was going on. Srila Prabhupada spoke for 3 months on Chaitanya Charitamrita. But it did bring about a revolution because there was a sincere attempt to glorify the Supreme Lord. Therefore, I said, we really congratulate the organizing team, the devotees, for being so far-sighted, for knowing the power of Srimad Bhagavatam and presenting Srimad, giving an opportunity for devotees to come and hear Srimad Bhagavatam. You know, there are so many devotees, we have seen their lives becoming auspicious, blessed because of Srimad Bhagavatam. Because I think all of us will admit, we all are going through suffering. Is there anyone who has not faced any suffering in life or is feeling that I have no problems in life? To win an argument, you may say, yes, I have no problems, I have no suffering. But please trust time. And if you are confident that I have no problems in life, then you are just challenging Mr. Time, who is going to soon invade our lives with problems which will be too overwhelming for us. We all are faced with problems. But our challenge is, as devotees, we want to keep our consciousness at a level where we are above the problems. Like for example, right now, I am safely assuming that all of us, you know, symbolically putting, we all have problems in our lives, we are going through some misery, some suffering, but our consciousness is at a level of say 5 and our suffering is at a level of 3 or 4. We are above our suffering, that's why we are sane, that's why we are able to sit in this temple hall, you know, we are grounded, we are able to have social, healthy social interactions, isn't it? All this is happening because to a certain extent we are above our problems. But the gap is very narrow, small margin. We are at 5, the problems are at 3 or 4. Any moment, the problems could overwhelm us. In fact, right now you're sitting in this temple hall, I think we are just one phone call away from a major disaster in our lives. We don't know, we may get one message, one phone call. We have seen lives change dramatically because of some accident, some trauma, some upheavals. Overnight, fortunes change. Life is not, Srila Prabhupada said, this world is not a fit place for a gentleman or a lady. Life is very, very, very nasty, harsh. So we need to keep our consciousness above our problems. And the margin is very narrow. When we take shelter of Srimad Bhagavatam, when we chant, when we glorify Krishna, what happens is our emotions, which are presently directed to ourself, you know, every human being is a sentient being. We all have emotions. We can't deny it. Whether you are a sannyasi, stoic sannyasi, or a very expressive grihastha, everybody ultimately is governed by emotions. We can't deny that. And these emotions, because they are directed towards the self, mostly we are governed by our egos and we are miserable. But what happens when we hear Srimad Bhagavatam, when we chant Hare Krishna and glorify Krishna, is our emotions get directed towards Krishna. When our emotions are filled with Krishna, then our consciousness, which is at 5, it rises to 9. And see the margin. And then if the problems suddenly come in our lives and it shoots up to 7, 8, but we are always situated above our problems. So even though you may not have much problems now, no problem. Hear and glorify Krishna. Because as they say, you know, outside an Indian army cantonment, I saw one slogan which said, the more you sweat in peace, the less you bleed in war. So yes, now we may be a little safe in our lives. We may have our finances in place. We may have our family. Good. Now is the time to work hard. Sweat it out. Hear Srimad Bhagavatam. Chant Hare Krishna. Associate with devotees. For that when disaster strike, we are ready. So therefore, let us take shelter of Srimad Bhagavatam. I am extremely grateful to my dear friend, His Grace Gaur Gopal Prabhu, for taking us on the journey of Ambarish Maharaj's wonderful character. And yesterday we heard his wonderful qualities of Ambarish Maharaj. And tomorrow we'll continue to hear the pastime how Lord Vishnu protected Ambarish Maharaj. Today, I would like to briefly touch upon this theme of Atithi Devo Bhava, which is the annual theme for this year, from the Srimad Bhagavatam. When I first heard this yesterday during the introduction, when Shruti Dharma Prabhu said, Atithi Devo Bhava, immediately my thoughts went back to the year 2006 when I was with a group of young boys, 170 boys. We were going on a pilgrimage to Remuna, which is a few miles east of Balasur, a small town in Orissa, on the way to Jagannath Puri. So what happened was very interesting. We were a group of 170 boys in a technically a foreign land. We didn't know the Oriya language. And we were in the streets doing Harinam Sankirtan. And every one of us, all 170 of us, were shocked by the reception, pleasantly shocked or surprised by the reception we got. As we were chanting in the streets, everyone, the houses on the both sides, people came out, women were blowing conches, children joined us in the kirtans, elderly people, they were offering namaste, namaskar to us. And the houses were clean. The roads were clean. They were made of, you know, this cow dung walls, thatched roof. Very simple dwelling. But people were so happy. And we all felt welcomed in this village. And everybody made it clear that the 170 people have come to our village. This is a festive occasion for us. We are very happy that you have come here. They actually made us feel we are, you know, Atithi Devo Bhava. We felt so welcomed in that village. I've never experienced something like that in my entire life. We're going to a strange village. People are cheering us. They're joining us in the kirtan. And then what happened is all young boys, we started contrasting it with our experiences in Mumbai because we were all going from Mumbai. And Mumbai, when we do Harinam Sankirtans, we attract very suspicious looks. The people, security guards outside every building, they're looking at us. And there are buzzer alarms and so many high-tech gadgets. And there are boards saying, beware of dogs, trespassers will be prosecuted. Very scary, very negative vibes. But in a village, people are opening up their hearts, their homes for us. And as we walked in our kirtan, we came to one place, one school, where the principal of the school, Mr. Mohanty, he knew that we were coming. So he had arranged garlands for 170 of us. And he served us nimbu pani, lemon juice. And he was so happy. He said, you have come and blessed our village. And we were all, you know, the boys were all young and they were overwhelmed because they had never thought that they would be honored so much. And then we went to our destination, our dinner destination where we were supposed to take dinner. That was Mr. Kamal Lochan Das, a simple man from this village. Inside his house, he had a deity of Radha Govinda, a temple which is 300 years old. And he's a simple man and he had arranged a huge feast for all of us. And he was holding a lantern and it was dark. He was helping people settle down. And after the whole feast, when we were offering him a small donation, he refused to take the donation. He said, no, I just want all of you to come again to our house. And we saw, you know, actually, I've never met him after that. We were, in one sense, strangers, never to meet again. But that family left such a deep impression in our hearts that even today, 11 years later, we are remembering them. So poverty, and they were actually poor, you know, they just were able to make their ends meet. So what is poverty? It's poverty of the heart, actually, at the end of the day. If somebody has a desire to serve, if somebody is genuinely wanting to love, then there is no limitations. As they say, there is a saying, it is very difficult to be happy with little, but with much, it is impossible to be happy. And there are these people, see, we need to understand that this is all coming from some other source. This is all coming from the Vedic culture, which emphasizes on Atithi Devo Bhava. Yesterday, Gaur Gopal was quoting Taittiriya Upanishad, which says Matra Devo Bhava, Pitra Devo Bhava, and Atithi also. A guest is also honored as God. And the place where we were staying, that was Remuna, where Madhavendra Puri 600 years ago had celebrated a huge festival. From there he had gone to Vrindavan and celebrated a festival. And every day for 2 years, there was a huge festival in Vrindavan for Krishna. Nobody starved, nobody went hungry. There was a festival, everybody was celebrating and honoring Prashadam. Now, it's a very paradoxical thing. Just think about it. In the Vedic culture, till recently, you would see that individual families possessed little. But because their life was centered around Krishna temple in the center of the village, people never went hungry. People were always, collectively, community-wise, they all had shelter. Individually, they may not be wealthy. So this was also confirmed by William Bentinck or Macaulay, one of them, who addressed the British Parliament in 1835, saying that this letter is there in the House of Commons library, where he has very emphatically explained how, after traveling all over India, he has seen that Indians are very wealthy, although they are individually very poor. In fact, recently I saw one book by one British police inspector, Edward Cox. He wrote a book called My 40 Years in India. From 1830s to 1870s, he was serving as a police inspector in one police station in India. And he would come once in 2 years to England for 3-4 months and go back. So he wrote a book saying My 40 Years in India, and it's an amazing book where he explains about lifestyle in the 1830s, 1840s. And he says he saw that Indians had much less compared to the Britishers, because he was also coming to his hometown in England. And he would go back to India and he would contrast. He would say that Indians had very little, but I saw that they were more contented. And they always had festivals to celebrate. Although they seem to have nothing, but they seem to be happy celebrating festivals, glorifying the Lord. So this is a Vedic culture where we come together, we glorify Krishna, and whoever comes is served. It sounds so simplistic, but it is very profound. I remember in the same trip to Remuna, the next day I met another brahmachari friend of mine. We were catching up after 5-6 years. So we sat near a small lake. And we were just talking, and suddenly one small boy came with two broken chairs. He was struggling to offer us to sit comfortably. And I looked at this boy and I said, this boy, where did he learn hospitality so much? He's hardly five and a half. And then I looked around and we realized there was a lady on the side, all huts, they were circular shaped, round. I think that hut was maybe 1/7 of this temple hall. Small, just this much space, a hut with some straw, made of straw, extremely poverty condition, obvious they are very poor. And this lady had only one piece of cloth covering her whole body. And we saw her. She looked at us immediately. She looked down. It was obvious to us that she is the one who arranged these chairs. Broken, you know, stool. It was made up of some, the coconut fiber, you know, those things. Very basic facility. But we, to honor her desire, we accepted it. And the child went off playing. And then we sat on that for a few minutes. And then we continued talking for 2-3 hours. And then after we finished, we wanted to go back. And we said, what do we do with these chairs? So we went looking and we saw one small hut. We presumed that is the place where this lady was staying. We went in and she was there inside cooking. And there was nothing in that small room. And she looked at us immediately. She became very shy. We said Hare Krishna and we left. So then we were reflecting. See, this lady had nothing, but she offered. Just because she saw us. So this is, even in our bus party, when we go for Sankirtan, we have seen in India so many places, so many schools, so many temples. Sometimes people just, yes, you come. Whatever they have, they give. So where is all this coming from? This is coming from the culture of Srimad Bhagavatam. This is coming from the culture of Ramayana, Mahabharata. You know, as a young boy, I grew up in a small village. Every day I remember, my memory is very vivid. You know, I stayed till the age of 10 in a small village with my grandparents. My grandfather, my grandmother, they would take me in the evenings to the temple. Because every evening, 5:30 to 7:38, there would be some drama or something about Krishna or Ramayana or Mahabharata happening in the temple, village temple. That was the entertainment. And I would go and I would watch these dramas and then come back in the evening. And the whole village would come there. And now when I go to my hometown to meet my mother and I see nobody comes to the temple. Hardly anyone there. Everybody is watching IPL, Bollywood, politics, cricket. So many distractions. Naturally, what is happening now? Individual families are possessing more. They are becoming wealthy. But they are actually becoming poor. They are becoming selfish. So it's a very tragic turn of events now. In fact, in the Vedic culture, it is said a person before eating his food, he has to come out of the house and declare. He has to say three times, he has to announce. Is anyone hungry? Please come in. Is anyone hungry? Please come in. Three times he has to announce and then he has to go in and take his own food. I shudder at the thought of what would happen if somebody does that today. But this was the way things were earlier. That's why Srila Prabhupada, if you see, Srila Prabhupada is also coming from that culture. That's why he said that in all ISKCON temples, he declared that we should always have prasadam for the guests who come. In one letter, Srila Prabhupada says, we should always have sufficient amount of puri, sabzi, halwa. Anybody comes at any time, we should be able to give them prasadam. Even today, if you go to South India, many temples, Dharmasthala, Udupi, Krishna, even in Barsana, there are places where any time of the day you go, you get prasad. Any number of people can go. So, even now the remnants are there of that glorious culture. Even today, little bit, it's there somewhere. Srila Prabhupada's own father, Gaur Mohan De, do you know what he would do? How he would follow this principle? Every day he would serve sadhus and guests at home and serve them prasadam and he would tell them, please bless my son Abhay that he becomes a pure devotee of Srimati Radharani. In fact, Gaur Mohan De would also keep everyday food for the rats because he was a cloth merchant. And no, grains merchant. He was having a lot of grains and a big shop. He would keep some grains for the rats so that the rats are also happy. So, Srila Prabhupada taught us this and we see in Srila Prabhupada's pastimes also. When you read Srila Prabhupada's biography, you read that when Srila Prabhupada was in Vishakhapatnam in 1972 February. Now please understand, here is Srila Prabhupada with young foreigner American disciples who are just in their early 20s. They are staying at Vishakhapatnam at Bhakti Vaibhav Puri Maharaj Ashram. And there is one brahmachari there, very elderly. He is Srila Prabhupada's godbrother, means he is also 70 plus. His name is Ananda Das Brahmachari. And he single-handedly would cook for all the devotees who had come with Srila Prabhupada. He would cook the prasadam and then he would insist on serving. He would serve all the devotees prasadam twice a day. Huge feast. Single-handedly cooking and serving. And for all the 2 weeks that they stayed there, he was doing this service. And he was Srila Prabhupada's godbrother. It's like, you know, all the young disciples of Srila Prabhupada, they are being served by their guru's godbrother, which means somebody who's the age of their guru is serving them. And they were the guests. And Ananda Prabhu had nothing, no expectation, just serving quietly, very happily. And the last day of their stay, Srila Prabhupada became very emotional. And he told his disciples, in an emotionally choked voice, he said, you see this devotee Ananda Prabhu? You want to know what is a devotee? You want to know who is a Vaishnava? This is a Vaishnava. Srila Prabhupada said. So, this is our mood, our culture. Srila Prabhupada said Krishna consciousness movement, our process is to serve. In fact, in that temple, Bhakti Vaibhav Puri Maharaj recently left this world a few years ago. He was in his mid-90s. You know what happens? What you do the whole life, that's what we do at the time of death, isn't it? Those kind of our actions, our thoughts are similar. So when he was in the last stages, anybody would come to see him because the whole life he was only He was only conscious of giving prasadam. Whoever came to his matha, temple, you would ask them, did you take prasad? He was a very big sannyasi. He's a disciple of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. At the age of 93, as he is lying on his deathbed, in a sense, he was going back to the spiritual world now, and he's lying on the bed, devotees are coming to see him. In his last stages, he's looking at them and saying, prasad, prasad. Have you taken prasad? And then he would call his disciple and say, prasad, prasad. Anybody would see, he would want them to take prasad. This is Bhagavad culture. This is Krishna conscious culture. And if we don't do this, see, there was a recently one lady was telling me, Prabhuji, last 2 months were most horrible for me. It's so embarrassing for me because my son, 19-year-old son, he met with a very serious accident. And at home, he would be very reticent. He would not show what he does outside, but we knew that he had bad association. And he was very foul-mouthed. He would always use swear words. But at home, he was little restrained because we were strict. But he was out of our control. And when he met with an accident, very serious accident, and 2 months he was on the bed, and he would get this delirium many times. And anybody would come to see him, he would only hurl abuses and swear words. Because that's what he was doing whole day. So now when he was unconscious or semi-conscious, what he was doing during his waking hours, that came out spontaneously. And his parents were so embarrassed because friends would come to see him and he doesn't know what he's doing. So when I heard that, I realized what we do consciously during our waking hours, that's what becomes implanted in our consciousness. So this Bhakti Yoga Puri Maharaj example is a classic case of serving. And this is the Vedic culture. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, we find many wonderful examples. One of the best examples in Srimad Bhagavatam is right in the beginning. We see the great warrior hero of Mahabharata, Bhishma Pitamaha. He is lying on his deathbed. His deathbed is not ordinary. You know what Bhishma Pitamaha's deathbed was? It was a bed of arrows. Oh, what excruciating pain he must be going through, you can imagine. And Bhishma, as he is lying on that bed of arrows, Pandavas come to see him. And Suta Goswami describes, what did Bhishma do? Although he was in that, and his whole body was bleeding. Tan sametan mahabhagan upalabhya vasuttama pujaya mashadarmagyo deshakala vibhagavit. It is explained that Bhishma Pitama, in that condition, he offered his pranams and perfect welcome to all the Pandavas who came. Although he couldn't offer them anything physically, but from his mind, his heart and his words, he spoke pleasing words and he offered the best possible welcome. Srila Prabhupada says, in that purport, there is no impediment to serving guests who come to us. Even if you have nothing, you can at least offer sweet words. In the Vedic culture, can you imagine Jarasandha was the enemy of the Pandavas and Krishna. But when Krishna and Bhima and Arjuna went to see him, he was an excellent host, keeping all enmity aside. So this culture is very beautifully described by Mother Sita to Hanuman in the Ramayana. When Hanuman, all of you know this pastime, that Hanuman went to Lanka and he told Mother Sita that after Ravana was killed, Hanuman went to Mother Sita and said, Mother, now give me the order. All these Rakshasis, they harassed you for 1 year in this Ashoka grove. Now I am going to take revenge. I'll kill all of them. So Mother Sita, the first time she mildly admonishes Hanuman. This is the only instance where Mother Sita is chastising Hanuman. She calls him a monkey. She says, you monkey? Then she tells him, no, we shouldn't do that. Because they just did their duty. These Rakshasis, they were ordered to do that by Ravana. And Ravana is killed now. So why do we have to get vengeful against them? And then Mother Sita said, what is the culture of a civilized human being? To explain the culture of living, she tells a very nice story. She says, once there is a human being, there is a man who was being chased by a tiger. And he was running for his life. And he saw a tree and he climbed on the tree. And the tiger was right below the tree, waiting for this man to come down so that the tiger could eat him. Meanwhile, the man climbed the top branch of the tree and there he saw a huge bear, Bhalu. And he got scared. And the tiger saw the man on the branch of the tree and above him he saw the bear. So the tiger told the bear, "See, this is a man, he is our common enemy. Throw him down. I'll feast on him. I'm hungry." And the bear said, "No, my dear tiger, he is my guest. He is Atithi Devo Bhava. He is my guest and I am going to serve him. I am not going to throw him down." So then the tiger said, "I'll wait. One day he has to come down. Eventually he has to come down." So the tiger waited. Meanwhile, the bear told the man, "Don't worry, as long as I am here, you don't have to worry, fear about the tiger. You are my guest and I'll see that you are protected." Now who is telling this story to whom? Braj Bihari Das is telling all of you. Now who is telling this story? Mother Sita is telling this to Hanuman. So the bear was the host and the man was the guest. After some time the bear felt a little sleepy. So he told the man, "I'm going to sleep. I'm tired." So the bear went to sleep and the tiger saw the bear has gone to sleep. So the tiger turned to the man and said, "My dear man, you are my friend. See, what you could do now, you could throw that bear down, push him down, and I'll get my meal, and then you can escape. Win-win." And the man said, "Wow, what a brilliant idea." And he climbed on the top branch, and he pushed the bear. But the bear is strong. So as he pushed, the bear woke up. And immediately, he balanced himself. And he realized what the man had done. And he looked at the man and immediately the tiger said, "Oh, my dear bear, do you see what a crooked nature this man has? All men are like this. Throw him down and let me finish him off." Now, if we were in the place of the bear, what would you do? We would all listen to the tiger. But the bear told the tiger, "No, he may have done that, but still he is my guest. I can't do that." Now, Mother Sita is telling this story to Hanuman and she says, we should learn from the bear and we should be kind. So, this is there in Ramayana. So, this is the culture. I mean, of course, we may not be able to imitate it or apply it as it is, but the principle of servitude, the principle of serving is there. And in the Srimad Bhagavatam, we find the classic case of Shamik Rishi and Parikshit Maharaj. Do you know this pastime? Shamik Rishi was doing tapasya, meditation. He was sitting silently. And Maharaj Parikshit, the emperor of the planet, is on a hunting expedition. He comes to the hermitage of Shamik Rishi. He's thirsty, he's hungry. And Shamik Rishi doesn't greet him. And he says, "I'm thirsty, please give me some water." Shamik Rishi is just eyes closed. Parikshit Maharaj becomes very angry. And he picks up a dead snake and he puts it on the neck of Shamik Rishi and he leaves in anger. Now Srila Prabhupada clarifies, this is hardly an offense. It is actually not an offense because Parikshit Maharaj is the emperor of the planet. He deserves full respect. And this Rishi knows all the basic philosophy, the courtesy of honoring a guest. And here a guest has come, he could have at least offered him some water. But because it didn't do that, Parikshit Maharaj didn't actually punish him. If he wanted to punish him, he could have done something worse. He just put a dead snake and he walked away. But Shamik Rishi also didn't take offense. But Shamik Rishi's young son, Shringi, who saw this incident, got very angry. He cursed the king to die within 7 days. And Parikshit Maharaj, now the most important part of the story is, Parikshit Maharaj felt very repentant and guilty for the mistake he committed. It's not that he justified his action. As soon as he left the ashram, he said, "Oh no, what did I do?" You know, sometimes we do some mistake You know, sometimes as preachers, when we are giving class, this happens sometimes, or when we are talking to people. I don't know if it has happened to you. Sometimes you say something, the moment you say it, you realize, I shouldn't have said it. It happens. So something like that happened to Parikshit Maharaj. He did something, and then he realized, oh no, I shouldn't have done this. Terrible mistake. I shouldn't have done this. And then he prayed to the Lord. He said, my dear Lord, I deserve to be punished for my misbehavior. And Shamik Rishi realized, he said, oh no, this is a king, it's my fault, I should have served him. And he didn't consider it as an offense. But this young 7-year-old son, Sringi, he was very proud and arrogant because of the prowess that he had developed. And he cursed King Parikshit to die within 7 days. Now very important, you know, Parikshit Maharaj has never committed a mistake his whole life, always been serving. Just this one small incident was blown out of proportions by this young boy, Sringi. Sometimes we see devotees, they are very nice, their whole career is good, but somewhere, some small mistake they do, we pounce on them because of that. And that becomes our focus. We forget everything else. Parikshit Maharaj's whole life was glorious. He served everyone so sincerely. But all that is forgotten. And this one incident, why did he do this? And he was cursed. And then, when Parikshit Maharaj was saying, oh Krishna, I deserve to be punished, please punish me. It was not simply lip service, he actually meant it, because that very instant he got the news that you have been cursed to die within 7 days. Now if he was feigning, if he was pretending, then he would have got upset when he was told that you have been cursed to die within 7 days. But when he heard the news, what happened to Parikshit Maharaj? Like sometimes, you know, we may say, Prabhu, I'm servant. But when my false ego is hurt little, then my master nature comes out. So it's easy to say, I'm a devotee, Prabhu. You know, in ISKCON we have this lingo. Prabhu, I'm Das, I'm servant. No, Prabhu, I'm your servant. No, Prabhu, I'm your servant. No, Prabhu, I'm in Maya, you are my master. No, Prabhu, I'm in Maya. No, Prabhu, you are in Yoga Maya, I'm in Mahamaya. No, Prabhu, I'm your slave. You know, people talk, we talk very lofty words. I'm servant, you are my master. But when we are in a provocative situation, what happens? Do we act as a servant? So Parikshit Maharaj is saying, I deserve to be punished. And here is a curse, okay? You deserve to be punished, you will die within 7 days. And what is Parikshit Maharaj's response? Sachintaya nittam atashuno dyatha mune sutokto niratistakshakakhya sasadumene nachirena takshaka nalam prasaktasya virakti karanam. His first reaction was, sadhu, excellent! Excellent that I have been cursed to die. I deserve it. This was the test and he passed it with distinction. Because what happens when we are tested, our real nature comes out. During the World War, there was a story that one German spy had entered the British ranks and he was there. So the British army knew that there is one German soldier there and they were wanting to find out who it is. But everyone was perfect British. They couldn't know. In their manners, in their way they were living. So they laid a trap. They suspected one man, one soldier. And they put the door in such a way that when this soldier put his hand, the door got stuck. It stuck on his hand and his finger got stuck on the door. And immediately he screamed in pain and he screamed in German language and he cursed. And when he did that, immediately they could detect, oh, he is the one. Like Akbar and Birbal, one man came to Akbar's kingdom and said, I know all the languages, you can ask me questions in any language. Somebody asked him in Gujarati, Marathi, he answered very well and he said, now I want you to guess my mother tongue. But nobody could guess because he spoke all the languages well, so they couldn't understand what could be his mother tongue. So Birbal said, give me one day, I'll find out. So that night he sent a man quietly behind this man. And this Birbal's messenger went. And when this man was in his room, and in Agra winter, it's very cold. So he took a bucket of cold water and threw it on the man. As soon as the water fell on him, he screamed in his mother tongue, his native language. And immediately Birbal understood that is his mother tongue. So when we are in a crisis situation, our real nature comes out. So our internal mood is seen when we are vulnerable. And that's what was seen in Parikshit Maharaj. When he was in the most vulnerable situation, his genuine desire to serve, his genuine Vaishnav quality came out. Srila Prabhupada, what was his mood? What was his personality? You know, all, whole life he preached, made so many temples. We have heard glories of Srila Prabhupada. During his last days, as he was lying in Vrindavan, about to leave this world, Srila Prabhupada called for Ayodhyapati Prabhu. And Ayodhyapati Prabhu is now known as, in ISKCON, Bhakti Vrinda Govinda Swami Maharaj. Bibi Govind Swami Maharaj, we all hear his kirtans. He was that time a grahastha. And he was a cook in the Krishna Balaram temple. Srila Prabhupada called for him. Srila Prabhupada's health is in its lowest. He is about to leave the world. Extreme pain. And Srila Prabhupada is discussing in great detail with Ayodhyapati Prabhu about the prasadam of the devotees. Are the devotees happy taking prasadam? What are they taking for breakfast? How is their lunch? What do you have? Do you have salad? Do you have this? Do you have that? All the minute details he's planning and he's asking. Are the devotees happy? So, Bibi Govind Maharaj says that Srila Prabhupada, at that stage, the age of 82, is about to leave this world. His body is breaking apart. Instead of thinking about himself, he's only thinking how I can serve. How I can give service. And then, later on, he came to see Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada was alone in the room. Nobody was around. And Srila Prabhupada was chanting. See, you know what? You can know somebody's character when he does some, what he does when he's alone. That determines a person's character. And Srila Prabhupada was all alone in the room. And Ayodhyapati Prabhu went to see him to give him a report about devotees' prasadam. And he saw Srila Prabhupada all alone. And he is shaking his head and is singing the glories of devotees and wanting to serve them. Srila Prabhupada was chanting a particular prayer. Tadera charana sevi bhakta sanevas janame janame hoye abhilash. The meaning of this prayer is Srila Prabhupada is saying, I want to serve the lotus feet of all devotees. Not just this lifetime. Birth after birth, I want to be the servant of devotees. And then Srila Prabhupada said, Ananda bolo hari bajo vrindavan Sri Guru Vaishnava pada majaiya man. Srila Prabhupada was saying, oh, with great joy, let us chant Krishna's names, let us worship Vrindavan, and let me aspire to be the servant of Vaishnavas. So this is a mood, not for a public performance. It's not that I'm giving a lecture, you know. I may say I'm a servant. But Srila Prabhupada is actually on his last stages. And there he's saying, you know, let me serve the devotees. And this is the mood of Parikshit Maharaj also. Parikshit Maharaj, when he heard that he's going to be cursed to die, he's been cursed to die, he left everything and he went to the bank of Ganga to perform his meditation and to connect to Krishna. He left everything. And imagine the emperor of the planet. Yesterday, Gaur Gopal Prabhu gave a graphic description. Ambarish Maharaj ruled all the seven continents. And Parikshit Maharaj ruled the whole planet Earth. And he's leaving everything and renouncing. What a news that must have been. So everybody came to see him and get his blessings. Because everybody knew that Parikshit Maharaj is a great devotee of Krishna. So everybody came to take his blessings. Now here is Parikshit Maharaj. People are coming to him to get his blessing. But he is in the mood that they are coming so that I can serve them. This is how a guest and host relationship, Atithi Devo Bhava, is. The Atithi doesn't come to boss around. He wants to get purified by the association of the host. And the host wants to serve the guest because he wants to get purified. Both are grateful. So when and who are these rishis? All the top rishis. They all came. Tatropa jagmur bhuvanam punana mahanubhava munaya sashishya ప్రాయేణ తీర్థాభిగమాపదేశే స్వయమి తీర్థాని పునంతి సంతా. సుతు గోస్వామి ఎక్స్ప్లెయిన్స్ దట్ హూఆర్ దిస్ సేజెస్ హూ వెంట్ టు సీ పరీక్షిత్ మహారాజ్. దే వర్ దెమ్సెల్వ్స్ గ్రేట్ సెయింట్స్ అండ్ దే వర్ గోయింగ్ టు గెట్ అసోసియేషన్ ఆఫ్ పరీక్షిత్ మహారాజ్. దట్ మీన్స్ యూ కెన్ ఇమాజిన్ ద పొజిషన్ ఆఫ్ పరీక్షిత్ మహారాజ్. లైక్ యూ హవ్ హర్డ్ దిస్ పాస్ట్ టైం, కృష్ణ వెన్ హీ కేమ్ టు మిథిల, టూ పీపుల్ కాల్డ్ హిమ్, కింగ్ బౌలాశ్వ అండ్ అ పూర్ బ్రాహ్మిన్ శృతదేవ్. నౌ కృష్ణ ఇస్ గాడ్, హీ కుడ్ ఎక్స్పాండ్ హిమ్సెల్ఫ్, సో హీ వెంట్ టు బోత్ ప్లేసెస్ సైమిల్టేనియస్లీ. అండ్ కింగ్ బౌలాశ్వ ఆర్గనైజ్డ్ అ మ్యాసివ్ రిసెప్షన్, ఆల్ సింగర్స్ సింగింగ్ అండ్ మ్యూజిషియన్స్ అండ్ ఛప్పన్ భోగ్, సో మెనీ ప్రసాదం, అండ్ కృష్ణ వాజ్ సర్వ్డ్ సంప్షువస్లీ. At the same time, Krishna at the house of Shrutadev was a poor Brahmin who didn't have anything. In fact, he didn't even have mats to offer Krishna and his companions. He ran to his neighbor's house and got some mats. And he fed something very meager to Krishna. And then to entertain Krishna, he didn't have anything to entertain Krishna. He didn't have the musicians and the dancers. So what did he do? He just got up, started jumping and started dancing. And Krishna was laughing. Krishna was so happy. Krishna accepted both services with equal happiness. So Parikshit Maharaj is here on the bank of Ganga receiving the guests. And how did he receive these guests is very important. Now Parikshit Maharaj very well knows that they all have come to see him. He's the emperor of the planet. But he's so careful, so conscientious, he knows, no. They haven't come to take my association. I am an ordinary man. I'm in fact very fallen. They have come to bless me. And they are thinking, no, we are going to get blessings. And who are the people? Sutta Goswami says, how did Parikshit Maharaj respond when these people came? Anye cha devarshi brahmarshi varya rajarshi varya arunadayascha nanashraya pravaran sametan abhyarcha raja shirasava vande. Shirasa means head. Parikshit Maharaj immediately put his head on the ground and offered full dandavat pranam to all these sages, saying that, thank you, I am your servant. This is what Krishna did when Sudama came. Sudama came to Krishna, the Supreme Lord, but Krishna served him humbly and menially. When Vishwamitra came to Maharaj Dasharatha's kingdom, Dasharatha Maharaj served him. This is the mood. Actually, many modern day leaders cannot understand this. How a king is a servant, how a king humbly serves. These concepts are unknown to modern day Indian politicians. That's why when our Indian Prime Minister, when he recently removed the red light that they have on the government vehicles. So many of these earlier politicians were the leaders. They were shocked. It never struck to them that they should do this. Now the mood of this government is, apparently they don't want the leaders to have any facilities more than the ordinary man. So, but this is considered as a gimmick because nobody has ever thought of doing something like this. But this is the way a king or a leader is supposed to ideally think, that I'm sorry. So this is the mood ideally it should be. And this is not simply doing. Parikshit Maharaj is immediately careful. The sages come and say, oh king, we have come to get your blessings. And Parikshit Maharaj says, oh no, don't put me in illusion. I know why you have come. You have not come to take my association. You have not come to give me blessings. Don't put me in this illusion. You have come because you are very kind to me, because you know that I am a grandson of Arjun. And because you have a lot of respect for my grandparents, Pandavas, and because I am connected to them, you have decided to be very merciful to me, although I am unqualified. See the exchange. Aho vayam danyataman rupanam mahattamanu grahaniya shila ragyam kulam brahmana pada shauchad durad srishtam batagarya karma. Parikshit Maharaj gives a graphic example. He says, just like when you go to somebody's house, but before entering the house, you go to a place where you wash your feet. During those days, people's bathroom would be outside the house. Nowadays, bathroom is inside the house. You know, earlier days, people would eat inside the house, and for bathroom, they would go outside the house. Now, the people eat outside the house, and for bathroom, they go inside the house. It's a little different. So we are talking about a different culture 5,000 years ago. So Parikshit Maharaj is saying, before entering the house, you wash your feet at a place and then enter the house. So he says, Durad Visrishthat, he's saying, Brahmana Pada Shauchad, the place where you wash your feet, I am that place. My position is, I should be in a place where you wash your feet. That means I am a servant. And you have come because you have decided to be very kind to my grandparents, because you love my grandfather Arjuna, so you decided to give mercy to me. So this is in essence the mood of Bhagavatam. This is in essence the mood of a devotee who wants to serve. And one of the most illustrious examples of this service has been one very great Vaishnav saint called Ramanuja Acharya. All of you have heard of Ramanuja Acharya? He is the foremost Acharya in the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya. In fact, 2017 is his 1000th birth anniversary. He was born, according to the Christian calendar, he was born on April 13th, exactly last Thursday. April 13th, 1017 was his birthday. So, 1000 years. And it's amazing, even today you go to Srirangam, Kanchipuram, Tirupati, you go to Sri Vaishnava culture, tradition, temples, you will see that the standards he set 1000 years ago is still being maintained with perfection. So it's very inspiring if you see his life. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught two important lessons to all of us, which he borrowed from Sri Sampradaya. One was Ananya Bhakti, unalloyed devotion to Krishna. And second was how to serve devotees. This was taught to us by Lord Chaitanya from the example of Ramanuja Acharya. So our entire Krishna conscious philosophy is based on three sacred principles. All of us should know this. One is Vaishnava Seva, service to all devotees. Second is Naam Ruchi, chanting the holy names. And third is Jivdaya, compassion, being kind to others. And all this is, the foundation of all this is, I am a servant. All the examples that we have discussed so far is all based on this. And Ramanuja Acharya taught this many times, how we should only want to serve. And he had two very, very famous disciples. One was Yagyesh, was a very wealthy man. And second was a very poor man called Varadaraj. One day when Ramanuja was in his town of Kanchipuram, he told his disciples, I want to go for lunch. Please tell, first go to Yagyesh's house and tell him I'm coming to his house for lunch. So the disciples went to Yagyesh and said, Guru Maharaj is coming for lunch. Can you please arrange? And Yagyesh became so happy. He said, yes, I will do everything. Please come soon. So the disciples came to Ramanuja Acharya and said, Gurudev, Yagyesh is very happy to serve you lunch. We'll all go there now. Ramanuja Acharya said, no. Tell me, how did he receive all of you? So the disciples said, he was so excited when he heard that you are coming. He got busy. Ramanuja said, no. How did he receive you? He just was happy, he smiled and he carried on making the arrangements. Then Ramanuja said, okay, now you go to Varadacharya's house and give him the news. So when they went to Varadacharya's house, he was also overjoyed. But what did he do? He got these few disciples who had come with the news. He first made them sit, he washed their feet, he offered them all respect and honor. And then he went about making the arrangements. And when they came back and gave this report to Ramanuja, Ramanuja said, we'll all go for lunch to Varadacharya's house. Because he knows the proper mood and etiquette of service. That not that only the guru is important. Whoever comes has to be treated with respect. In fact, once there was a very interesting story of Varadacharya's wife, Lakshmi. They were extremely poor, and once a disciple went to her and told her that Ramanuja Acharya is coming with a few of us for lunch today. And she got so panicky and she wanted to serve Ramanuja Acharya, and she didn't have any grains at home. And in panic, and there was a merchant nearby who was always casting lustful glances at her. So she went to that merchant and asked for the grains, and he always wanted to enjoy her. And then he told her that if you want these grains, you'll have to fulfill my desires to enjoy you. And in that panic, she promised him that she will fulfill all his desires later, but right now she needs all the grains because she needs to serve her Guru Maharaj, Ramanuja Acharya, who is coming. So she took all the grains and she prepared a huge feast. Then Ramanuja Acharya came, the disciples came, they were having this prasadam. And then Varadacharya also came, her husband also came. And he was also surprised, such a huge feast, where did my wife get all the grains from? And then as the prasadam got over, Ramanujacharya also understood what must have happened. And then Varadacharya went inside and asked his wife, how did you get all these grains? And then she confessed what she did, what kind of promise she made to this merchant. And both of them were perplexed what to do. This was a very big predicament now. So they came to Ramanujacharya. And Ramanujacharya, understanding what had happened, he just smiled. He said, no problem. You take this Mahaprasad, he told Lakshmi, go and give this to that merchant. And when she gave and when she went, she gave this Mahaprasad to that merchant, and when he had that one grain, because it was the Mahaprasad of Ramanujacharya, who is the embodiment of service, always serving. When he had that prasad of Ramanujacharya, his heart completely transformed. He fell at the feet of Lakshmi and begged forgiveness. And he went on to become one of the stalwart devotees of Ramanujacharya. His heart completely transformed. So, like this, Ramanujacharya taught through many of his disciples and example how we all need to imbibe this mood of being the servant. One of the most famous disciples of Ramanujacharya is a personality called Dhanurdas. He was a very flamboyant young man and very attractive, and his girlfriend was a very famous society girl of those days. And he would always hang around with her, and he would always be fanning her, putting an umbrella over her head, and always looking at her. And once there was a procession of Lord Ranganath going, and everybody was taking darshan of Ranganath, but Dhanurdas was totally focused on taking darshan of his girlfriend. He was not looking at the Lord at all. And Ramanujacharya saw, what is happening? Who is this man? Everybody is taking darshan of the Lord, and he's looking at this lady. So he told his disciples, call him here, I want to talk to him. So he came, and Ramanuja said, what is so special about this lady? He said, her eyes. Nobody has eyes like hers. So Ramanujacharya told him that if I show you eyes, a pair of eyes which are more beautiful than her eyes, will you accept? Will you leave her? He said, yes, yes, show me. I don't think there can be any pair of eyes which can be more beautiful than hers. So Ramanujacharya was a pure devotee of the Lord. So by his fervent prayers and devotion, he prayed for a transformation of the heart of Dhanurdas, and he took Dhanurdas to the inside chambers of Ranganath, and he gave him darshan of Lord Ranganath. And when Dhanurdas saw Lord Ranganath's beautiful eyes, his heart completely transformed. But Ramanujacharya did a very good thing for him. He got him married to that girl. And then both of them became the best devotees of Ramanujacharya. They served the devotees very nicely. In fact, they became so close to Ramanujacharya that the brahmacharis became little envious. That here was a fallen man, very frivolous, and you know, he's now become so close to our Guru Maharaj, and we are renunciants. But Ramanujacharya always glorified Dhanurdas and his wife as very sincere devotees. In fact, when Ramanuja would take bath in Kaveri, before entering the Kaveri, he would hold the hand of Dasharathi, one of his Brahmin disciples. And while coming out, he would hold the hand of Dhanurdas and come outside. And every day he would do that. And one day in front of everybody he said, my dear Dasharathi, you are a Brahmin. I hold your hand and then go inside the Kaveri because you have Brahminical pride, and I want to take all my Brahminical pride and drown them in Kaveri. And when I come out, I hold Dhanurdas' hand because he is filled with devotion. So when I hold his hand and come out, I get the devotion which he has in his heart, I get it in my heart. So the brahmacharis just couldn't take it. Here is a man who was so attached to a young woman till recently, and now he's just a new bhakta, and Ramanujacharya is giving him so much respect, and we are renunciants. Ramanuja understood what's happening in the ashram. So he thought, I'll teach them a lesson. So next day morning, when the brahmacharis woke up, they saw that all their clothes, kopin and their gamchas, it was all misplaced. And it was all missing. Some of it was missing. So the brahmacharis became very irritated, and they started fighting with each other, and they started complaining, and they started accusing each other. And Ramanujacharya smiled and said, see, for such silly things, you are fighting. How attached you are. And they also felt ashamed when they realized what they had done. And then little later, Ramanuja said, I think we should also expose Dhanurdas. He is a materialistic householder, isn't he? And everybody said, yes, yes, Guru Maharaj. At last, Guru Maharaj is now realizing that he is also attached. So how are we going to teach him a lesson? Ramanuja said, call Dhanurdas here, I'll talk to him. As I'm talking to him, all of you go to his house and steal all the gold and jewelry from his house and get it here. So Dhanurdas was sitting with Ramanujacharya. The disciples went to Dhanurdas's house to steal the jewelry. And that time, his wife, she was sleeping at home. And they were stealing all the jewelry. And she realized they are stealing. And what did she do? The first thought that came to her heart was, oh, remember the principle of service. Because she was fixed in this mood, she said, oh, they need wealth. There must be some serious crisis going on in the ashram. Oh, I wish I could give them more. I have a priceless, precious diamond earring. But if I wake up now, they'll panic and they'll run away. But I want them to see it. So let me move a little. For that, I make a little sound for that. They turn their eyes on me and then they see my earring and then they'll take it. That will be good for them. So with the desire to serve, she moved a little. But when she moved a little, the brahmacharis, instead of recognizing that she has a diamond earring, they panicked. They thought she's woken up and they ran away with whatever little they had. And they came to the ashram. And then Ramanuja saw that they've come. Then Ramanuja said, now all of you go. I'm sending Dhanurdas to his house. You go and see what happens at home. So the brahmacharis went outside and they observed. Dhanurdas came home and his wife reported what had happened. And Dhanurdas told her that, then what happened? And his wife said, I turned around a little so that they could take the diamond ring. But when I did that, the brahmacharis panicked and they ran away. And Dhanurdas got angry with his wife. He said, you foolish woman, why did you move? Why did you disturb them? They could have taken more. So when they were discussing like this, how they should serve Ramanujacharya, the disciples, the brahmachari disciples were totally humbled. And they came back and they surrendered to Ramanujacharya and begged forgiveness. And that's how Ramanujacharya taught that one's mood and attitude of service is not dependent on one's ashram. Where he is situated, how he is situated. In fact, the sannyas ceremony, Ramanujacharya took sannyas because of the principle of service not being followed properly by his wife. This is one of the external reasons. His wife Rakshambal, she was not at all happy that Ramanujacharya was taking guidance from Kanchipurna. Kanchipurna was a lower caste man and he was a pure devotee of the Lord, Varadaraj. But Rakshambal, Ramanuja's wife, thought we are Brahmins, we are pure. And Kanchipurna is a lower caste man. So when Ramanujacharya called his spiritual master to his house for lunch, Rakshambal did not serve him properly. In fact, what she did, she just kept prasadam and after Kanchipurna ate prasadam and left, she thought a lower caste man has contaminated her house. So she cleaned the house with cow dung and she picked that leaf plate with the bamboo stick. She didn't even touch it. She was so proud of her Brahminical status. For Ramanujacharya was very, very sad and the relationship was getting strained. And at that time, during that time, Ramanuja called one of his senior most worshipable gurus, Mahapurna, and his wife to stay at his house. Mahapurna and his wife were staying with Ramanujacharya and his wife Rakshambal in their house for 6 months. And they were serving them menially. But again, Ramanuja's wife was from a little higher Brahmin caste than Mahapurna. So one day while drawing well from the water, she scolded Mahapurna's wife. That just because my husband respects your husband and treats him as a guru doesn't mean that I'll also respect you. I am from a higher caste. She chastised her. So Mahapurna's wife became very sad. She didn't say anything. She just kept quiet. And Mahapurna came and asked her, what happened? You're crying. She said how Ramanuja's wife treated her. And Mahapurna said, oh, we shouldn't fight. We shouldn't do anything wrong. Let us quietly leave this place. And they left Kanchipuram. They left the town. When Ramanuja heard what had happened, he became very upset. He became very sad. And then immediately next day he told his wife, a letter has come from your house. There is a wedding ceremony. They have called you. Please go. So when she went, it's a 4 month travel and she would be gone for 4 months. So when she left, Ramanujacharya took sannyas. And that's how he became a sannyasi. So the principal taught was service. So the whole mood in Bhagavatam and Vaishnavacharya is this. I want to serve. I want to be with devotees. This is the mood. And Parikshit Maharaj, can you imagine, he's not able to leave his world. Whole life he has served. And now, what is his mood? In the last stages, when the devotees are seated, he's telling them, he's asking for blessings, right? When we are dying, we want blessings. And what blessings he asks for? Punascha bhuyat bhagavati anante rati prasangascha tadashreshu mahatsu yamyam upayami srishtim maitrastu sarvatra namo dvijebhya. He says, my dear sages, if I have to take birth again in this world, please give me 3 blessings. Let me get unlimited attraction to Krishna. And let me get tad ashrayeshu, let me get shelter of devotees, and let me get an opportunity to serve them, and let me have friendly dealings with all living beings. Maitrastu sarvatra namo dvijepya. So here is a man who has seen Krishna when he was in the womb of his mother. All of you know, Parikshit Maharaj saw Krishna when he was in the womb of his mother. But now when he is dying, he is saying, I want devotees. Interesting, isn't it? In fact, he got the name Parikshit because when he was in the womb, Krishna came with his Sudarshan Chakra to protect him from Brahmastra. And Parikshit Maharaj, as a small baby, thought, who is this friend of mine who is protecting me from the heat of Brahmastra? He is my friend. So when baby Parikshit came out of the womb, he would catch everyone to see if this is the person who saved him when he was in the womb. So he would catch, he would pull the dhoti or the sari and he would look up. Oh, is he the one who saved me? Oh no, he is not the one. Another person. He would examine everyone. Para ikshanaya iti Parikshit. Because he was doing everybody's pariksha. He was examining everyone, he got the name Parikshit. So here is a person who has seen Krishna and he is saying, I want devotee's shelter. Amazing, isn't it? Even Dhruv Maharaj is standing in front of Lord Vishnu. Do you know this pastime? After intense tapasya, Lord comes in front of Dhruva and says, yes, my dear Dhruva, what do you want? And what does Dhruv Maharaj say? Give me intimate association of devotees. Bhaktim moho pravahatam tvai me prasango bhuyad ananta mahatam amalashayanam enanjasolbanamuru vyasanam bhavabdim Neshe bhavad guna katam brutapana matta. My dear Lord, I want to become mad. I want to go mad hearing about you in the association of your wonderful devotees. This is the most amazing thing you find in Bhagavatam. Here is Parikshit Maharaj. Here is Dhruva, who have got Krishna and now they are wanting devotee association. We are sometimes finding the association of devotees very challenging. We think, let me tolerate these devotees for some more years. And then I'm going to get Krishna. For us, devotees are ladder which we use to go to Krishna. Here are people who have already got Krishna. And they are saying, this is what we want. That means we are getting, right now what we are getting is what the pure devotees want. So you can imagine our fortune. We are not even realizing how wealthy we are. Narottam Das Thakur was a personality who was so close to Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya predicted that my intimate devotee Narottam Das is going to soon arrive. And Narottam Das Thakur in his bhajan says, I want association of devotees. Because what happens is these devotees, you know, they carry Krishna in their heart. So when we connect to devotees, when we serve them and when we have dealings, relationships of service with them, then our heart also gets filled with the same affection for Krishna which they have. We actually get their what the attraction they have, we also get some of it. So Narottam Das Thakur in his bhajans, he always says that, even he says, I want to go to a Vaishnava and tell him, please, Kandiya Kandiya Jana Iba Dukha Gram Samsara Anala Hoite Magi Bevishram. He says, I want to go and cry in front of devotees and tell them, please, my dear Vaishnava devotee, please, Prabhu, please tell Krishna that I am suffering. Krishna will listen to you. And Krishna may give me mercy if you pray to him because you are dear to Krishna. And then he says, and when a devotee will pray to Krishna on my behalf, then I have some hope. Shunya mara dukha Vaishnava Thakur Amalagi Krishna abe dibena prachur. So, shunya mara dukha Oh, Vaishnava will hear my dukkha and he will feel so compassionate on me, and then he will tell Krishna, Krishna, please take pity on him. He is a very nice person. Please take pity on him. And then Krishna may consider me and he may give me some mercy. Vaishnavera nivedana Krishna daya maya e na pamara prati habena sa daya. Then he says, then Krishna will say, oh, this fellow has approached my devotee, so he deserves mercy. This is the mood of all devotees. Lord Chaitanya, Supreme Lord, when he is in Jagannath Puri, anybody came to Jagannath Puri, he would be at the entrance of Jagannath Puri with garlands and chandan. The Supreme Lord would greet his devotees and serve them. You know, the ones who came to Jagannath Puri were his devotees. They were coming to associate with Lord Chaitanya, and Lord Chaitanya was serving them and embracing them, giving them Mahaprasad. And so this is the mood. Srila Prabhupada also taught us this, that how we need to shift the focus. Our emotions right now are focused on whom? Self. So when we have a service attitude and when we connect to Krishna, then our emotions are churned and purified and they are spiritualized. If you see Srila Prabhupada, I think you must have heard some pastimes of Srila Prabhupada where he is very angry and is chastising. But if you see his own personal life, when he was insulted or when he was not given some facilities, he was very tolerant. His emotions were for Krishna, not for self. You know, once Srila Prabhupada was in Melbourne, La Trobe University, and very nasty crowd, they started hurling abuses at Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada is giving a class and they became unruly and they started throwing things on the stage. Srila Prabhupada's safety became the big concern for devotees. They had to take him from the back door, and as Srila Prabhupada was being ushered into his car, this rowdy group of boys and girls, they came to attack the devotees. Srila Prabhupada was made to sit in the car, and as the car left, these boys and girls from the university student radical wing, they came and they kicked the car and they threw paint. Srila Prabhupada had a narrow, close shave. You could have been physically harmed. So when Srila Prabhupada left that campus, Srila Prabhupada didn't say anything, he didn't make an issue of it, he just quietly chanted on his beads. Now here is a sannyasi who was worshipped and respected in Vrindavan as a Babaji, and now he's going out to preach Krishna consciousness and he's taking so much risks. Srila Prabhupada again went to Australia next year for preaching. Srila Prabhupada was not affected. He didn't make a big issue of his personal, like once in Canada when he was giving a class, when Mr. Banerjee was coming to his class. And suddenly in the middle of the class, Mr. Banerjee, initially he said, oh, Banerjee, oh, Bengali. So Prabhupada was a Bengal. So they became friends. But one day in the middle of the class, this Banerjee, he went bonkers, he went crazy. He suddenly got up and he started shouting at Srila Prabhupada. And devotees were shocked at this behavior. And then after shouting at Srila Prabhupada, Banerjee left the room and he walked away in angry mood. So then everybody was shaken and Prabhupada continued the class. And next few days, Banerjee was nowhere seen. Devotee said, good riddance to bad rubbish, as they say, gone. They were happy. But after a few days, Srila Prabhupada looked at the audience and said, oh, where is this Banerjee? He's not coming nowadays. Devotee said, Prabhupada, but he's offensive. Srila Prabhupada said, no, he's not offensive. He told me something because I must have offended him in my last life. But why should he be deprived of Krishna consciousness? So Srila Prabhupada never took things personally. So devotees who are carrying Krishna in their heart, we want to get connected to them and we want to love them. Srila Prabhupada, that's why he could, when he was in New York, he was cooking chapatis, prasadam for hippies. They would eat prasad and they would go, and Srila Prabhupada would then clean the whole house. And there was one boy, Stanley, who would come and he would eat 25 chapatis. He was the only one whom Srila Prabhupada had to, after 25 chapatis, Prabhupada had to say, enough, now I can't serve you. And these boys and girls would come, they would eat and they would go. Srila Prabhupada would clean the whole house. So this is the mood of Krishna conscious devotees. They want to see everyone happy. Sarve jana sukhino bhavantu. Because Vasudeva Kutumbakam, for them the whole world is a family. So as devotees, you know, I want to really, really express my heartfelt gratitude to the Bhaktivinoda Manor devotees. Some of the hospitality that we have received here, the love, the affection is top class. You know, I sometimes feel the whole community here has just come out of the pages of Chaitanya Charitamrita or the scriptures. Always serving, always giving so much respect. I still remember one incident which happened in 2003. It's 14 years ago. You know, the sabbatical boys had come, 2004, 2003, 4. And one of the devotees, I will not tell his name because he wouldn't want me to tell his name. He became very close friends with one of our brahmacharis who's from a very simple village. And he doesn't know English. And this devotee from England, he didn't know Hindi. But can you believe it? They became the best friends. Because their language was a language of love. It was a language of the heart. How they connected to each other. And when this devotee who had come from England, he fell sick. This devotee was actually from a very simple village. He knew only Marathi language. He took care of him so well. Even today when I was leaving this time, he told me, Prabhu, you are going to England. If you meet him, Hari Bol, give him my regards. So, and this Prabhuji knows no Hindi and this Prabhuji knows no English. But still they are the best friends. Their hearts beat for each other. So this is a clear example of a Krishna consciousness and affection and love service. This transcends all barriers. So basically they're thousands of miles away, isn't it? But even today their hearts are beating for each other. Jai Shri Shraddha Gokulanand Bhagwan ki jai, Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai. So just to conclude, I'll just briefly conclude in the next 2 minutes. Let us remember the important principle of Atithi Devo Bhava, service to Vaishnavas. Once I had the good fortune of asking Giriraj Swami Maharaj that, Maharaj, you got so much mercy of Srila Prabhupada. And Giriraj Maharaj narrated that, actually it's not Giriraj Maharaj, another devotee was speaking about Giriraj Maharaj. I was asking question on Giriraj Maharaj, so this devotee said that when Giriraj Maharaj was told that he got so much mercy of Srila Prabhupada, Giriraj Maharaj raised his hand and said, I am simply a mercy case. And then this devotee explained how when you go to the hospital and you see somebody is admitted, if somebody has gone through a bypass surgery, you know, he has all these wires and all these things there on his body, something on the mask and some wires and some pipes. You can see that his condition is extremely fragile. One thing goes wrong somewhere, he could die. So then this devotee is saying, all of us are like that. We are held through so much mercy from so many factors, so many people. So we need to be very humble, very grateful, receive it, and let us base and let us center our lives on serving others, making others happy, adding to somebody's happiness. One thing that really struck me when I was a new bhakta is in one of our brahmachari classes, our spiritual master was giving a class and he gave a very simple example. He said, there are 80 brahmacharis. If each one of you thinks about yourself, how many people will be taking care of you? How many? One. And then he said, if each one thinks about the well-being of others, how many people will be taking care of you? 79. So even logically, even materially, logically speaking, it makes more sense to always wanting to serve others and wanting to please others. So let us practice Krishna consciousness in this mood, and let us offer our hearts and souls to service, and let this year be a meditation on the principle of Atithi Devo Bhava. And this way we can please Srila Prabhupada and get a sincere desire to serve. And then when we have this service as the foundation, then chanting Hare Krishna becomes very easy. Because Bhaktivinoda Thakur has very beautifully sung in his bhajan, Sakala Sammana Kurite Shakati Devanata Jata Jata Tabeto Gaibo Harinama Sukhe. Only we can chant holy name with great happiness when we can respect everyone and offer them our hearts and souls in service. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Grantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.